Hey everyone, welcome back to Contractor Revolution, the podcast by Breakthrough Academy. You've heard it before, the riches are in the niches, or as I like to say, niches. But is that really true? Today, I'm talking with Ryan Lee. Before selling in 2019, Ryan grew his business to 200K a month. His service offering though? Landscape lighting. Just landscape lighting. Now he coaches home service entrepreneurs who either want to run their own landscape lighting business or add it as a service offering. This conversation is all about niche services. Should you niche your business down further, or should you expand into another niche, maybe to cover your off season? What are the honest pros and cons of niche services? Ryan's got a wealth of experience and is going to help us answer all of these questions. I hope you enjoy. You're listening to Contractor Evolution, the podcast by Breakthrough Academy, where we systemize contracting businesses for growth. Keep listening to learn how the world's top contractors scale their companies, build killer teams, and make more while working less. Ryan, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me. Appreciate it, Danny.
Happy to have you, man. We've got all things niching today. We're going to talk about when to niche, when not to, when to add a niche service to what you do, and when not to. So excited to get into it. You also have had an interesting career. I mean, you've gone from being a contractor to a coach to a lighting specialist. Your brand itself is super niche, which we can get into a little bit as well.
Yeah.
But what's your journey? How did you get to this place?
Yeah, man, it's crazy. I've always wanted to like do my own business. I was the guy who like, you know, I shoveled walks when I was 12 in Utah and made $20 on a weekend or something like that. And I appreciated making money, had a single mother growing up. And I think I was partly that. I'm like, I want more money. Like we couldn't do the fun stuff, you know? We weren't poor and didn't have like dirt floors, but we just couldn't do the fun stuff. And so I've got a marketing degree. I got an MBA. And when I was going through my MBA, I had this, I was thinking about window cleaning, and I was thinking about really blowing up a window cleaning business, because when I got married, I was trying to figure out a way to come up with money. And I literally thought I invented the window cleaning industry. I'm not even kidding. I was like, I look up in the Yellow Pages at the time, this was like 2002. And there was like a cleaning store down on State Street. I go in there and I go, you have those like squeegees, you know, that they have like you see at the gas stations where it has the scrubber and the squeegee. And they're like, no. And I'm like, ah, shoot. And they're like, but we have like a whole aisle of window cleaning stuff. And it had like holsters, squeegees, all this stuff. I'm like, what? And I made enough money that summer, my wife and I knocking doors to get married. And it was, I loved it, but I didn't know that wasn't a business. I mean, don't tell the IRS, but like it wasn't a business. Right. And so as I was getting my MBA, I literally was just focused on like, how could I expand this business? And all the exercises we'd go through, I was thinking about window cleaning. My brother had also moved to Texas to start a window cleaning business. I told him, he didn't move there to start it, but he moved there to, you know, he's getting away from the law. And I said, you should get into window cleaning. If you don't like it, you have your money back in 3 days. And he had done that. So we literally, the plan was to move down there and blow up this window cleaning business. But honestly, we went down there, bought a house. We were in his hot tub celebrating. And he told me about these landscape lighting jobs. And he goes, dude, I just did these two jobs. They were $4,000 each. And I was like, what do you mean landscape lighting? I don't even know what that is. He's like, yeah, people light their houses and trees. I'm like, what kind of idiot pays $4,000 to light their house and trees? Well, I literally made the decision in the hot tub. I said, dude, I'd much rather sell a $4,000 lighting project than a $250 window cleaning project if it's going to take the same amount of time to sell it. And that's how we got into landscape lighting.
That's hilarious. And how long have you been doing this now?
So I started that business in 2007. And I moved from Utah to Texas to start that and sold it in 2019.
Okay. I find it very interesting. Like you talk about window cleaning, which I've seen some of the most amazing members I have or the most amazing dialed businesses are in small niche services like this. Yeah. Landscape lending is even more niche. What are just some things operationally that you've discovered about this that are like beneficial versus just being a painting company or being a roofing company? Or this is a very like niche thing to do. You know, a lot of people just go into landscaping in general. But you went into lighting.
Yeah. I mean, and trust me, I was not smart enough to think forward through this to be like, oh, I want something simple. And I wasn't thinking. It just like fell into my lap. But I will say, looking back retrospectively, it's freaking amazing. When you can niche down operationally, like everything's just simple. Like you just do the same thing and you do it well, and it's easy to do well. In fact, when we started really kind of growing, a lot of our clients would give us so many compliments and go, man, you guys are so awesome. Like, we've never had an experience like this with anyone we've worked with. We've built 5 or 6 homes. We've hired every trade possible. You guys are amazing. In fact, would you guys build, do you guys do outdoor kitchens? Do you do pools? Do you do anything else? And trust me, I was tempted. I was like, yeah, for 150, 200 grand, I pretty much do anything you want, right? And we literally started exploring that because we had so many people asking us. But I had this epiphany and I started telling people, I said, you know why you love us so much? Is because we only do one thing. If I did your outdoor kitchen, your pool, your outdoor living, your landscaping, you would not like me. I would be in the same bucket that everybody else is in, because it's not possible to be the best at all those different things.
And I was talking to some of our members even before this, but I was asking them, I was like, what is the hardest thing for you to do? And they're like, it's to say no, because there's money on the table and we're trying to grow our business and we see opportunity. And I think about the whole, and I think even about like what we do as a business, I'm like, at some level, all of us are entrepreneurs, right? So we see this opportunity in front of us and it's like, well, we could, right? But there's costs to this. And before we get even to that, I would just love to know from your end. So you now coach this into other businesses, correct? Like, you help people build this into their own organizations, and you also help people start lighting businesses, correct?
Yeah. So kind of the story there is, when I sold my business, I didn't actually want to sell my business. Okay. Like, the worst thing you could do is spend 12 years building a business to run on autopilot and then sell it because like I did all the sacrifice and everything, but there was that's like a whole nother podcast episode where I was fighting with my brother, who was my partner and stuff like that. But regardless, I sold the business. And so I didn't know what I wanted to do. It's not like I made $100 million and was just going to go sit on the beach. I made some good money, but not, you know, life-changing generational wealth. And so I was kind of exploring, okay, what do I want to do? I had enough business owner friends that were reaching out to me and say, dude, how did you do? You did $1 million a year in just landscape lighting. Like, you're a marketing machine. I know you know how to do what you, can you like do our website? Can you help us with lead gen? And so I was like, okay. So like, I instantly had like this marketing company doing 15 grand a month without even trying, but I found out I didn't love it. Okay. I was like, okay, I can make money at it, but I do not like this at all. And I was at a marketing conference and I saw all these people on stage talking about their calling and personal brand and all this stuff that I didn't really even know what they were talking about. But there was a person who had a course on how to raise goats. Okay. And they were making like $1 million a year on teaching people how to raise goats. And I was like, that is the dumbest thing I've ever heard of. And they're like, what are you good at? What are you passionate at? And I'm like, I don't know. I'm like good at like a lot of things, but I'm not the best at really anything. I like to camp. I like to snowboard. I like to ski. I like to fish. You know, I like lighting, but like, who am I to say that I'm better at all these things than anyone else? And I finally decided, you know what? Like, I do know more than some people. You know, I remember myself 15 years ago when I didn't know what I was doing. So let me help that person. And I reached out to a coach and I hired my first coach. I'd never invested in coaching before. I was the guy that before thought it was a scam and was like, well, if you're so good, why don't you do it and all this stuff? But I needed help. And I reached out and I told the coach, I said, hey, this is who I am. This is what I do. And I want to help home service business owners. I want to help the painters, the roofers, the landscapers, the lighting companies, all this stuff. Well, we start getting into it and all my examples, all my teachings, all my experience was passionate about landscape lighting. And he goes, dude, why don't you just be the lighting guy? And I'm like, because that would be dumb. Like, how many people are going to hire me? Like 2? And I'm going to waste years going after these 2 people in the world. And I just was like, I just don't know, man. Like, it just doesn't make sense to niche down that far. Like, I'll be the home service guy, not the landscape lighting guy. And he pushed back on me and challenged me. And I said, okay, I'll be the lighting guy because that's where my passion was. That's where I lit up. Like, that's where all my experience was. Who am I to tell a painter how to grow their business? I've never painted a house. I don't care about painting, you know? And so I did it. And that was in 2020, right after COVID. So I was a little nervous for that, obviously, too. But yeah, we launched it and it's been going great, man. I mean, I have more clients than I ever even imagined was out there. And there's a lot of people that either have a lighting business that are stuck and they're really good at lighting, but they're not good at business. They don't know how to make any money and scale it. And then there's a lot of people, like you mentioned, that have like another home service business that are like, man, I see opportunity. I see lighting as a growing segment. How do I get into that? So we help both existing clients and or existing business owners that are doing it, plus people that want to bolt it on.
So this is what I want to talk about today. And I don't want to try and take too much of a side onto niche or not to niche, but because I think there's opportunity in both, but there's times in business to do it. And there's times in business where it can be a disaster, and there's times in business to add services, and there's times in business where that can be a disaster.
Right.
So let's get into this a little bit first. I want to talk about just adding this as a service. So for the clients that you work with, where you're adding this onto what they currently do, like, why do they do this? Is it like boredom? Are they kind of just margin chasing? Are they like, just have too much client demand? They come to you, like, what are the good places where they come to you and they're like, they're ready to do this for the right reasons? What are the bad places where they come to you and they're just reacting?
Yeah. So when I originally launched this, I was expecting it to come mainly from landscapers, because some landscapers already offer lighting, but they only do like 4 or 5 jobs a year. It's if the homeowner asks, like, hey, do you do lighting? They're like, yeah, we do lighting, you know? But I thought it was going to be this huge wave of landscapers. Well, what ended up happening was just kind of organically was, and it's kind of funny because it mirrored my past. There's these window cleaners, these cleaning companies, power washing companies that happen to slow down in the wintertime. And they learn about the thing called Christmas lights. And they get into Christmas lights and they're like, holy cow, like I just made like 300 grand in 2 months. And I made more money than I did all year in my cleaning business. There's something to this. But the challenge that they create unknowingly is, in order to do 300, 400, 500 grand, you have to hire more people than your existing staff. So now they become full-time recruiters and trainers. And they're like, man, it was good. But now what happens? Like, they can't keep those people busy. And so they lay everybody off. Then the next year they hire a new wave. If they're lucky, they get a couple of people they had last year. But they realize, you know what? If I'm going to go all in on lighting, I need to go all in on lighting. And I need a business throughout the year that can keep these people busy. And that's where they find out about landscape lighting, find out about myself. And so those are the people that are coming to me saying, hey, I want to maybe level up. I want to go from an average ticket of $500 to $700 to $5,000 to $10,000. They're chasing a higher profit margin. They're chasing something else that they feel like they're not finding in their own business.
And you're sustaining them through the off season, which I know there's a lot of seasonal businesses probably listening right now that do some sort of off season work. And that can be a very beneficial way to operate, but it is two different businesses, is it not?
It totally is. So this is where people get into trouble, because they're like, they get into Christmas lights, and that truly solves their main problem, is the seasonality, right? But then they're like, well, I could do more than 100 grand, I could do 500 grand, right? And in order to do that, they have to hire more people. So when they hire more people, now this is when you got to like start another business. And this is where people kind of crash and burn, because they'll get excited and be like, dude, I'm just going to start another business. But they forget that their business A isn't on cruise control yet. They still have problems. And I'm always going to have problems in my business. You know how this is. Like, you could have the perfect SOPs, the perfect team. There's always problems. And so they're not even close to that. You know, they're still on the truck in a lot of cases. They're still answering the phones themselves in a lot of cases, and they don't have the bandwidth. They don't have the team to be able to start business B.
Yeah. I think we misunderstand just how much more operational complexity we add when we try and chase more revenue that's outside of our niche. But it can be good. Like you said, it can help sustain year over year, you know, keeping revenue pretty steady. When you get into this with people, and you've worked with quite a few, I would love to just hear this from you know, your perspective, but like, what specific like systems or roles need to be in place before somebody starts adding another service? Because there's a lot to this, from the production bandwidth to the sales process to the org chart to the financial controls. Like, when is somebody ready for something like this, and when is somebody not?
Yeah, this is it's actually a really complex question to answer, because like part of the reason we're successful as entrepreneurs is because we just like ready, fire, aim. Like, I that's what I do in my life all the time. So it's hard for me to be like, hey guys, let's think this through and like, let's plan this out and wait 5 years and see what happens. Because like, by then you could have already started and figured out what you really want to do with your life. So I don't want to like talk someone out of like, you know, going all in and taking some calculated risk and stuff like that. But at the same time, like, absolutely. If you don't have any in your existing business, an admin, your fulfillment team, you know, installers or your cleaners, whatever your business is, and a salesperson, like, business B is not going to take off. You might be able to fill in some gaps and make some money, but like those roles are crucial to have in place on business A.
I'll add to this too, because I mean, I work with so many of our contractors and I am like, look, the first thing we need to do is model out your existing organization. We need to understand its profit centers. We need to understand the organizational structure of who needs to be hired. So what you just mentioned, so having the right support staff, we need to make sure we have standard operating procedures documented for everything that you do. And we need to make sure that ultimately like this thing makes money in and of itself. And until you go add more, because otherwise we're just going to do a bad job of two things.
Yeah.
You know, we need to get this thing dialed in. When they've done a good job of that, the thing I find that's unique is there's so much learning that goes into this first like effort to make this one business tick really well. We can use 80% of that and change some stuff to build the next stable version of that in a different service type, or like you just said, an off-season service type that they can utilize. So yeah, I know for me, that's been a big one. Now you take on clients that do this. What are some of the big red flags you've seen? Like, here's the things like you should not be doing this. And you've actually had to push back a little bit and say that you should not, you're not ready.
Yeah. So again, we get into some of those questions, like what does your existing business look like? What are you doing on a daily basis? Who's going to be the champion of this new business? And how much time do you have to dedicate to it? And again, like, it's not that you have to be like, well, I'm sitting by the pool. I got 60 hours available. Like that's, no one really ever is just going to have that available. But if you can dedicate a day or two a week, so I tell people like, can you dedicate Friday to be a lighting guy? Can you dedicate Thursday and Friday to where like, no, you not only tell your existing team, but like your wife, kids, like, can you tell them like, I am not available on Thursday and Friday? If you can do that, then you can kick off a new business for sure. And if it's not you, it has to be somebody else. Like, can you hire someone for them to be the champion where like their neck is on the line if they don't sell $10,000 in landscape lighting this week, you know?
Yeah. We have the same thing. We say you need 5 hours a week to work on your business, not in it, right? So that we can get some space. Let's take a bit of a different angle on this now. Let's talk about like the concept of niching down. So actually getting rid of everything or being the most specific person in your marketplace, which again, you've already alluded to, has been very good. What are the different like ways to do this? Why can this work? Why can this not work? And what are the benefits and some of the cons too?
Yeah. So, well, I'll start with the benefits, I guess, because I just love the benefits of niching. It worked for me when I had my active landscape lighting business very well. It worked for us now. From a contractor standpoint, I mean, if I'm going in and I'm selling landscape lighting, and I'm up against, let's say, a landscaper who's also doing lighting or a cleaning company who's also doing lighting, like I'm going to win that job almost every time. For a few different reasons. Number one, my passion is going to come through because like this is my thing. This is my jam. It's not just, I don't have like five passions and I'm like, which hat am I putting on when I walk into this house? Like got the five different hats in the truck. Which service am I going to represent? But also because I'm just better. Like I'm going to go in and, if you're not like as passionate and good at lighting design as me, I'm going to go in and present a proposal that has 100 fixtures where yours might have 20. And some people might think, well, yeah, well, mine's going to be a lower price. I'm like, exactly. Like they're going to be blown away how cheap yours is. And that's going to be the red flag for them. Cause they're going to be like, dude, this Ryan Lee guy, like he's on another level. This guy has proposed stuff that no one's proposed, you know, and if you're all in and you're segmented like that, you can be the expert. If not, you're kind of like the order taker. And you're like, okay, what do you want, Mrs. Smith? Yeah, we want that tree lit. We want some lights on the house. It's like, okay, well, it's hard to differentiate yourself if you're just an order taker because then it comes down to price. So there's a lot of benefits by being niche down and really being the expert in your field.
I think this exact concept you're thinking about, I think about with my Jeep. I've got a, you know, big old Jeep Gladiator and I put lots of parts on it that cost me way too much. Yeah. And I always go to the Jeep auto mechanic because I'm like, even though he's bolting on the same bolts as someone at an auto general auto shop, I will pay extra because I know they specialize in Jeeps. They've got just a certain way of looking at this that I'm like, no one else is going to think about how all these parts fit together. And I will pay a premium for that all day long. And so it definitely positions you in the marketplace against your competition that almost no one can compete with when you niche down, which I think is kind of what the opposite of a lot of us think, which is like, if I niche down too much, like you said, you had a fear of this, I might not have enough customers. So do you see this happen often? Do people niche down too much? Is there such a thing?
Well, I think that's also difficult. I think there is potentially too much of a niche down thing, but honestly, I'm trying to think of the guy. I can't remember the book where he talks about the rule of 10,000 hours to become an expert. I can't remember the name of the book right now, but if you want to become an expert at something, you need 10,000 hours of focused determination hours, right? And that doesn't mean like owning your own business for 10,000 hours, because if you just own your own business and you're answering the phone and you're doing all the different things, you're not becoming an expert at anything, right? And so when you niche down, like, it takes time. So if you don't have time, in other words, if you don't have money to buy you some of that time, if you're not willing to be patient, that's where you can run into hardship. And so they want to get rich quick. They want to do $1 million their first year. If you don't have the ability to get in front of enough clients in that short period of time, then it's going to be hard to niche down. So that's where people start going, well, I'll build pools, I'll do outdoor, I'll do whatever. Like, whatever someone calls, the phone rings, I'll go do that. And I understand that temptation. But if you can push through that kind of those first couple years, where I think that's the hardest part of niching down is being patient enough to get in front of the right traffic.
I think about this for businesses doing transitions into more niching down services is like, look, we're not going to turn off the tap on all the current work you do, but we're going to start to professionalize the marketing process, the production process, the financial side of things in one area and slowly make the transition over. So we're not just like killing the machine before we even get it started. I'm curious to know how are profit margins when you niche down, and how do they change? How do they go up? I imagine they would go up, but like, to what level, to what degree?
I mean, I don't really know, because I don't know like how to not niche. I've always niched down. And I feel like they're always higher because of the things I talked about before. Like, I can charge higher rate let's take the landscaper example. A lot of these landscapers, if they're going to bolt on lighting, a lot of times they'll just throw in a 10 light system at cost. So they don't make any additional points on the lighting. Whereas I'm focused. This is how I feed my family. This is how I feed my team members. Like, I'm going to make all the margin count as possible.
I think a really good comparison is, could you let us know like what margins people should shoot for in specifically landscape lighting? Cause I think there's people listening that'll probably realize their margins are nowhere near that, but what is the margins that someone would shoot for?
Yeah. Net 20 to 30 points.
Net. So not gross, but net.
Yeah, gross. I mean, depending on how you guys do your numbers, you know, everyone has a different way of doing their budgets and their net income and all that stuff. But I'm talking like net 20 to 30 points for sure on landscape lighting. And what's cool about landscape lighting is it's high ticket. I mean, an average job for my clients is $13,000. And a small job is five, you know, so... And they're knocking these out in a day. Like, you can go do $10,000 to $20,000 in one day. Now, if I don't want to tell people the wrong thing here, like, your first install is going to take you 4 days. It's not. I don't want to false advertise this, but I've got clients that can install $25,000 to $30,000 in a day with a 5-man crew. Like, it's that profitable.
I've seen this in a few other industries. I've seen this in rubberized concrete, actually, which is a really new kind of niche service that people offer. I've seen this in obviously the garage renovations, and specifically garage flooring is a big one. But the market is still just starting in these areas, and you're able to determine exactly what you need your price to be. And the customer is not looking to cross shop you because you are the niche, unique service that you are. It gives you a chance to make a lot more margins, which also I think in time gives you that money to actually scale up. Can we get into operations a little bit? Like, when you niche down operationally, what does this look like? What's the hardest parts of this? What are some of the simplicities of this that cleans up a lot of the other things in other businesses?
Well, I mean, operationally, you've got an admin, you got someone answering the phone. You've got a salesperson, which is traditionally like the business owner. You know, some of our larger clients, some of our more mature businesses, it's not the owner, but that's typically where we see people coming in. It's like, hey, I do all the sales, you know? And they're willing to offload the installations. But still, a lot of people still answer their own phones. I can't believe it, right? And so you got your admin, you've got an installation team. As you grow, you get into maintenance, which is also recurring revenue for a lighting business, where you have maintenance plans. So you'll have a maintenance truck, an installation truck, and then the salesperson.
And how much revenue does something like that do?
Well, you can do $1 million with one truck for sure.
And basically making 30 points with $300,000 off of a $1 million lighting business.
Yeah. Unless if you're not one of my clients, you're going to probably make 10%, because I'm big on pricing. I'm big on like making sure, like I'm big on profitability, because when I started my business, I didn't make any money. I made money for like a couple months, and then I was like, where did it go? You know? And so I'm big on pricing, like who you want to be, not like who you are today. And that's what it's all about. Like you can be profitable today, but if you don't have enough money in the bank to be able to hire your replacement, then you're actually not that profitable.
I actually wrote some notes on this before we started, just these three big things you focus on, which is raising prices, chasing deals on the spot, or closing deals on the spot, and generating high quality leads. Can you give us just a bit of insight in like how you make these shifts happen?
Yeah. Well, I came down to those three things because when I was starting this business, I was like, what am I good at? What can I help people? What would move the needle the most? Because I don't like taking money from people. I don't want people feeling like I'm an expense. I want to be an investment. And so it really comes down to those three things. The first thing we always do is help people with their pricing. And that's the easiest thing. Like, it's all about leverage. Leverage is like minimizing your inputs while maximizing your outputs. And like pricing, you could just raise your price today and make more money. People, it sounds simple, but people will be like, no, that's not true because I'll lose clients. Well, when you do the math on this, you can afford to lose like 22% of your clients with a 10% price increase and make the exact same amount of money. So imagine raising your price by 10%, losing 20% of your clients. So you make the same amount of money, you get Fridays back, which is 20% of your week. So you're fishing on Fridays, thanking me for and Danny for having me on this podcast, because you make the same amount of money and you get your time back. Now, the sad thing is that's not going to happen, because when you can actually raise your price and actually gain more clients. But we start with pricing because it's just the easiest thing to help people with. Then the other ones, closing deals on the spot. This is so simple. I mean, when you think about it, even at your own home, like when you call someone for a quote to fix a garage or to do your landscaping or to do anything, what's the number one thing that you actually really want to know?
What the price is.
What the price is. Like, it sounds so simple, but like I don't know, I'm making up math right now, but the majority of businesses out there, they don't give the price on the spot. They take notes, they take pictures, especially with landscape lighting, because they're like, well, I got to put together a design and how am I going to do that? And so they take all these notes, pictures, they go back to the office, they put together this expansive proposal, and then they email it over, and all someone sees is a total down at the bottom that says $20,000. And they're like, okay, I'm going to get another bid. But why wouldn't we just give the customer what they want? The number one thing they want is the price. So we give them the price within the first 5 minutes. And then we spend the next hour building value and showing them why we're worth it. Instead of letting that sticker shock happen at the end, we hit them at the very beginning so that at the end, they get sticker relief instead of sticker shock.
It's interesting you bring that. I've taught that for a long time, and that's been counterintuitive to what I've heard in the marketplace. I think it's more like 1980s style, is like you build all this value and like, and here's the price. And
that's what
like,
that's what I was taught. That's how I learned sales. Yeah.
I disagree. I've always been like, let's be honest and open it up front. Actually, we even put our pricing on our website. We're like, this is what we charge. And now let's talk about what goes into it over time, so people have time to digest it. One actually thing I'll add to this on closing deals on the spot. I remember how important when I was running my painting company, it was to do a proper setup call. Where in that setup call, I was letting people know. And just so you know, so what we're going to do is we're going to go around, we're going to get our numbers, we're going to do our thing. At the end of the quote, I'll be able to have a price for you. So as long as the price comes in on what you guys are looking for and the services, what you guys need, is there anything else that you would need for me to be able to bring the job in that day with you? I'm setting expectations with them ahead of time to give them a chance to digest it. Like, oh, you know what? Actually, I'm going to need my spouse actually with me if we're going to make a call. Cool. Why don't we have them both there so you guys can both meet with me? And it gives them a chance to talk. What happens is they're talking about it at night in their bed before I come, because they've said, hey, so-and-so is going to probably see if we want to do it tomorrow. Do you want to actually like do this or not? Like, and they get to talk without me kind of interrupting that by the time I give them the price.
That's golden. You're literally the only one giving them what they want, because people don't really want to get quotes. I mean, they think they do, but they just want to find someone that has a good price and they want to get it on. They want to get their project done. They don't want to meet with other people. And so by people going back, meeting with them, waiting 2 weeks to send proposals and follow-ups, like, you're doing a disservice to your client. It's just not the right thing to do.
I always think a funny concept. I remember as a painter, I was like in my painter grubs and I would just go in there and be like, okay, so this is the quote, this is the price. And I was always like kind of this mindset of like, I'm here. I'm a painter. You need paint. We should probably do this. Like, I don't know why we're not doing this. Anyway, it's good. You have this other thought on generating high quality leads. Is there any just like nuggets there?
Oh yeah. So this is where also niching down is super valuable. So our kind of super secret ninja hack to generate high quality leads is going after referral partners. And this, okay, people already know that, but we have a system that helps you do that effectively and efficiently. And could you imagine, like, so some of my clients do landscape lighting jobs. My largest landscape lighting job ever was 150 grand. I still can't believe that someone paid that much. I have clients that are doing like $500,000, $600,000, $700,000, $900,000 residential, high-end residential landscape lighting projects. Okay.
Wow.
So
sorry, when you said that price, I thought you were talking about the whole landscape project. I was like, that sounds about normal, but that's lighting. Just lighting.
That's just low voltage lighting. Okay. This is crazy. So if you think about how you're going to get in front of those people, it's usually not a postcard. It's usually not them searching on Google. These people are well-connected. They have staff. They have house managers. They have relationships with their home builder, their interior designer, their landscape architect. I mean, their AV company who's there every day fixing their crap, you know? And so you want to get in with those types of people. Well, can you imagine going to a landscape architect and you're like, hey, I'm Ryan's All You Can Do Services. We offer landscape lighting. We'd love to get a relationship with you and refer you back and forth, like versus being like the dedicated lighting designer who has multiple awards and everything else, and that's your specialty. It's not even fair competition. You're going to land that job every single time if you're niche down, because they see you as the specialist. And so it's hard to get high quality leads if you're all over the place and you have all these different things. And I'm not saying like you can have like, there's successful businesses out there that have five, there's like one parent company, but then five different brands underneath it. And they do very, very well, because that's where it gets fun. Now you can start cross-marketing. Now you don't have to go and pick up and take your business from city to city. You already have almost the hardest thing to get, which is traffic. You have your client list. So when you can just cross-market, it's easy to get into these seven-figure businesses bolting on another one.
We talked about this earlier, but like there's a time for that. And there's also a time when that's not okay. Is there any just indicators you see where it's like, hey, it is actually safe now for you to take your service and start to build new brands and be able to do this cross refer? Because I think I hear this a lot from our members, especially the ones that are newer in business. They're stoked to do that, but it's like, it's too early, if we're honest. When is it too early? When is it the right time, do you see, with the people you work with?
I think you just have to look at your roles. Like, is your machine working? Like, if you step away from your business for 2 weeks, for 2 months, for 6 months, what's going to happen? And if the answers are like, dude, I'm fine. Like I only do sales, you know, 10 hours a week for this business, but I have an office manager. I have a production manager. I have install teams. Yeah. There's stuff that happens where I have to step in or whatever here and there, then it's time. But if you're still doing the majority of the work and you're stressed out, then the only thing that's going to happen is, you said earlier, is you're going to have two businesses that are problematic, or you need to be prepared to walk away from one of them. And I've had clients do that. They're like, dude, I'm so sick. I've been washing. I've been ruining people's plants with bleach for years. I'm just stepping away. I'm not even going to try to sell this business. It's a piece of crap. I hate it. It's a headache. I can't sell it. I'm just going to be a full-time lighting guy. And I don't know if that's right or wrong, but it's better than keeping two businesses that are a headache.
For most businesses out there that I've seen, I always recommend niching. There's a few. I have one actually that fights me out in Calgary. Beyond Foam, they can give them a shout out. He's done what you've done. What you've talked about actually is he's built multiple service brands, but they're quite large now, right? And they've kind of really systemized one core element, which was their Beyond Foam section. Now they have, I think they do lifting and roofing, and they've got the drywall, and it's not, it hasn't come without its challenges, but they had a profit center that was well systemized first. And then yes, they started to add these niche down services. Whereas I think a lot of people, they chase it. They chase it because there's client demand. They're excited. I think we all as entrepreneurs have some level of ADD inside of us. And so we're just always full of new ideas. And so we see opportunity, and it can be good, but in the right context. And actually what excites me more, so even just talking to you, as I'm like, man, what a beautiful thing to build an amazing little bonsai tree that is super profitable, makes 30%. You're going to win in the marketplace because you're the most niche down. You can go into your higher end clientele and you can be able to win those jobs. You have a more simple operational model that you can execute on that gives you space, right? And then you can decide what to do with that, right? My business partner, he built something called Shack Shine Window Cleaning with another person, and they ended up getting acquired by O2E Brands when Hunter got junk, basically. And it's just window cleaning. It was the simplest little thing. And it's like, we spend so much time trying to build so much complexity into our organization. It's really not helping. It's probably, if anything, the biggest hindrance we have. So,
and I would say this, like if someone is that shiny object, like again, people would ask me if I could build their pool. I'm like, damn, I know I could do a $200,000. Like I have the contacts, I have the subs, like I could do it, but my business wasn't ready. Like I was still doing sales. I was still putting out fires. I was still doing that stuff. So if you're in that point and you're like, man, I want to get into lighting, or I want to get into the foam business, or whatever it is, if you would just dedicate 12 months and now you have a trajectory, now you have a purpose. A lot of us just work in business and work, and we go to work because we have to, not because we want to. I'm trying to reverse that. I'm trying to help everyone go to work because they want to, not because they have to. If you will say, you know what, I have a 12-month deadline. I'm starting my next business in 12 months. What has to be true? If you can ask that question, what has to be true? It's not rocket science. Like if I can do it, you can do it. You know what I mean? Like you're going to have to hire a couple people. You're going to have to put some standard operating procedures in place and go do it. Like that's not that hard. Oh, I'm going to have to charge more money. I'm going to have to sell more deals. Okay. Well, if you're going to have to sell more deals, then what's your closing rate? Do you need to increase your closing rate, or do you really need more leads? Everyone says more leads, but I help people with the exact same amount of leads double their profits. So do you need more leads? And if you have all those other things shored up and then you want to focus on marketing, that's fine, but it's possible. You don't need a 5-year plan. You can get whatever you need done in the next 12 months to go then start your next business.
Some discipline and some accountability on yourself. If I'm going to go do this, I need to hit XYZ first. And those are my mile markers, not just because I think it's a good idea on a Tuesday.
Right.
Cool.
Man, I would have started 100 businesses this year if I went off the it's a Tuesday, sounds like a good idea thing.
I've seen it so much. I've seen it not even just in contracting, just in general entrepreneurship. It's like, man, what do you do? It's like, well, I've got this and I've got this. It's like the guy that opens his jacket's like, I got it all. What do you need? And it's like, dude, you're lost. And you always see those people. They're constantly repeating and restarting and they're never really getting traction.
Yeah.
So cool. Ryan, this was great. We can call it there. Is there any other just like advice you have for those listening around, those who are thinking to add services, those who are thinking maybe to niche down more, just any other final thoughts?
No, I mean, I think kind of what I just said is if, you know, most people don't have a plan. I hate the word plan actually. So I'm kind of upset that I just said that. The word I've been using lately is trajectory. If you will figure out really what you're doing, why you're doing it, and like where you're going, that has been so beneficial for me. And I didn't know that the first 5 years of my business, and maybe even the first 10 years. Like it really took getting intentional with why do I want to start another business? Is it just to make more money? And then what? So then you make more money. What are you going to do with that money? Like really figure out what your trajectory is. So if you want to go just from a visual standpoint, you have a map of the US and you're trying to go from LA to New York. Well, now you know, okay, I'm trying to go from LA to New York. You have a real destination. And when do you need to be there by? Is it 12 months? Is it 24 months? Is it 5 months? Is it next week? Like decide what, because if you have to go from LA to New York and you don't have to be there by tomorrow, then you need to be on an airplane. Like you can't walk. But if you're fine with going slow, I'm not like, you can walk. There's people that do that all the time. They do challenges. They're making YouTube videos about them biking around the world and all this other stuff. Like that's their dream. So you got to get intentional with where you want to go. And then this is the next step I'd say is where people get lost and they get maybe overwhelmed and scared is like, well, how am I going to get to New York from LA? I don't even have a map. And I'm like, it doesn't matter. You don't have to know all the steps. You don't have to know everything that someone else knows that's already been to New York. You just have to see the 100 yards ahead of you. And it doesn't matter if it's dark at night. Your headlights are still going to be on 100 yards ahead of you. And so don't worry about, well, what happens if this? What happens if that? People get so hung up on that stuff. It's like, you'll figure that out. When you get to Nebraska, you'll figure out how to do Nebraska. Right now, you're still in California.
what you're talking about is the pivotal thing we do with so many people is strategic planning, which is where are you going in 3 to 5 years? Okay, once we've established that and there's a reason for that, where are we going this year? And we'll have a general idea of exactly what that's going to take, but we don't have all the details. Now let's look at this quarter and what are the actual things that have to get done to make sure that this year goes well, so that make sure we're making our first step towards that five-year plan. Now let's talk about this week. Now we can have ultimate clarity on how things actually need to look in your calendar and what you need to say yes to, and more importantly, what you actually need to say no to. And whenever there's this ADD feel of like, oh, we should try and add that, or oh, we should do this, it's like, does that fit with the strategic plan? Does that fit with where we're actually going? And it's like, the answer is there for you. I don't even have to tell you. Like, you can answer this yourself.
Love that.
Cool. Ryan, awesome having you. Really enjoyed the chat. I think for anyone considering niching, for anyone considering adding services, I hope this helped a little bit. And other than that, you guys have a good week. I will talk to you later. And Ryan, on your end, any other just ways for people to connect with you if they want to reach out?
Yeah, I actually did forget to tell people I'm the host of the number one landscape lighting podcast in the world. So it's actually the only landscape lighting podcast, but it's still the number one. So you guys could check it out. It's Lighting for Profits. Just connect with me. I'm on Facebook, Ryan Lee. Landscape Lighting Secrets is my program. But I try to give so much value through my podcast that you can make enough money to where when I do ask you for money and make you an offer, you're like, duh, I've already made 10 times more than that.
You've dialed this in, man, and you've figured out the details. And I love that you're the number one lighting podcast in the world, right? So this is great marketing and also true, right? So thank you for filling the niche you have, and thank you for the chat today.
Thanks, Danny. You're awesome, man.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Contractor Evolution. If you've already subscribed to our podcast, consider sharing this episode with another contractor that you think needs to hear it.